Im bechukosai telechu, v'yes mitzvosai tishmeru, v'asisem osam, v'nasati gishmechem b'itam, v'nasina ha'aretz yivulah, v'eitz hasadeh yitain piryo. If you will follow my decrees and observe my commandments and perform them, then I will provide your rains in their time, and the land will give its produce, and the tree of the field will give its fruit. OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. And this show is for Parshat Bechukotai, outside of Israel, Bahar and Bechukotai. And this is the equalizer. Next week we're in full sync with Parshat Bamidbar. And it is really a show that's going to be a lot for Yom Yerushalayim, which is Motzoi Shabbat and Sunday, the 28th of Iyar. But first, being as today is a day that we do say Tachanun, Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir Hama'alot, Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shimavakoli, Tehiena Oznecha Kashuvot, Lakol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmoria Adonai Mia Amod, Ki Imacha Hasalicha Lema'an Tivare. Ki Viti Adonai Kivata Nafshi Velidvaro Hochalti. Nafshi ladonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifdeh et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha. ומאפלה לאורה ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב ונאמר אמן. Okay, we've got בחוקותי this week in Israel. We learned Bahar last week. In Chutz La'aretz, Bahar and בחוקותי are combined, as they are and probably should be in every 12-month year, known as a Shana Peshuta, a single Adar. The months that have the intercalated month of Adar, 13 months altogether, Bahar and Bechukotai are split. We in Israel split them additionally when Pesach begins on Shabbat, and we get into a problem by having no eighth day of Pesach, and in Chutz La'aretz there is an eighth day of Pesach. I've explained that all in the past, so let's move on. One of the things that I worked on last week, specifically for the Israel schedule of splitting Bahar and Bechukotai, is that in Bahar we get an offer from God. If you keep the mitzvot, then things will be good. And we do not get but if you don't, then things are going to be bad. That comes in Bechukotai. Bechukotai has the most, I don't know what the proper statistical word is, but the most variation in size of aliyot. The first aliyah is 3 verses. The second aliyah is 4 verses. The fourth aliyah, 15. Fifth aliyah, 6. Sixth aliyah, 7. Seventh Aliyah, 6th Psukim. What did I leave out? The third Aliyah, Shlishi, 37 Psukim. Happens to be the longest Shlishi in the whole Torah, and it certainly a result of not dividing the parsha anywhere near evenly. And the reason is the tochacha. The tochacha is a very, very hard portion to listen to. It is mandated that we read it in one felt swoop, call one person to the Torah, give him the entire aliyah, because we don't want to stop in the middle of the tochacha. The tochacha is one of the two big reproaches and warnings from God of what happens if we don't keep mitzvot. Watch the flow of Parshat Bechukotai. It started with the two psukim that I read in the beginning. If you follow the Torah and mitzvot, then you'll get rainfall in its proper time, and you will get bountiful crops. And the crops will be so bountiful, the Torah continues, that seasons will run one into the other, and, you know, your threshing will last until the vintage, and the vintage will last until the sowing, and you will eat your bread in satiety, and you will dwell securely in your land. So now we have another angle. Bountiful crops as a result of rainfall in its proper time and dwelling securely in the land of Israel. I will provide peace in the land, says God, and you will lie down with none to frighten you. And I will cause wild beasts to withdraw from the land, and the sword will not cross your land. You will pursue your enemies when that happens, and they will fall before you by the sword. 5 of you will pursue 100, and 100 of you will pursue 10,000. And your enemies will fall before you by the sword. I will turn my attention to you. I will make you fruitful and increase you, and I will establish my covenant with you. You will eat very old grain and remove the old to make way for the new. I will place my sanctuary among you, and my spirit will not reject you. I will walk among you. I will be God unto you, and you will be a people unto me. I am Hashem your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt from being their slaves. I broke the staves of your yoke, and I led you erect. That's the first 11 psukim, which brings us not only to Rishon and to Sheni, but into Shlishi. Shlishi starts good. And here, the custom is that the Baal Koreh will lower his voice. He has to be careful not to lower it too much. It must be audible, and he shouldn't rush because it should be heard. And we are supposed to hear this reproach, but it gets bad from here. But if you will not listen to me and will not perform all of these commandments, if you consider my decrees loathsome, and if your being rejects my ordinances so as not to perform all my commandments, so that you annul my covenant, then I will do the same to you. I continued reading from this point, and then I stopped the recording, went back, and erased it. I don't need to read this. I'll let you hear it in Shul on Shabbat. I'll let you study it in Parshat HaShavua. It is extremely depressing and frightful, and it saddens us that God has to be this strong in what he says to us. A parent sending off a well-behaved child to a day camp or a summer camp or whatever, a sleepover in somebody's house, a visit to someone for Shabbat, has to tell him, be good, eat what you're given, be complimentary, and, you know, all the good stuff. Does not have to be warned too strongly, be careful that you don't misbehave. Saying something like that would be enough. A child who's mischievous and whose behavior leaves a lot to be desired, though, when he goes, the parent gives him a very stern warning. I hope you have a good time. And if you behave, everything will be fine. But if you don't, you will be punished and you will be grounded and you will have privileges taken away, and keeps going commensurate, I guess, with the expectation of the behavior of the child. If we were to say that this is in any way analogous to Parshat Bechukotai, then God, I was going to say, didn't have such a great opinion of us. That's not nice to say, because he considered Bnei Israel, and always does, and continues to keep feeling that we are very special. We don't always live up to that. And history has shown that this Tochacha and the one in Kitavo sort of are necessary. And we need to take it seriously. And as I said, I'm not going to read the details here on the show. Open up a Chumash, look in Parshat Bechukotai, and actually, literally, read it and weep. Because it's very sad that we can reject God on such a level that he could threaten all of these terrible things. And if you don't think it's realistic, you don't know anything about Jewish history. Remember I said the Tochacha, the 37 psukim sandwiched between good stuff and good stuff, are all part of Shlishi, so that's early in the Sedra, except for the number of psukim. What we have at the very end of Shlishi is V'zacharti lohem brit rishonim, I will remember from them the covenant of the ancients, those whom I have taken out of the land of Egypt before the eyes of the nations, to be God unto them, I am Hashem. And then a summary of really everything up till now. These are the decrees, the ordinances, and the teachings that Hashem gave between himself and the children of Israel at Mount Sinai through Moshe. Now the Torah continues now, almost business back to usual, with a series of mitzvot that conclude not only Parshat Bechukotai, but the book of Vayikra. And you have various and sundry things related to the sanctification, and the sanctity, rather, of the Beit HaMikdash. And I think there's a message in there also. God says the equivalent of, I really laid it on thick, and I really warned you very sternly, and I really was very graphic in describing the terrible things that will happen. But you should know that you will survive, and you will have a Beit HaMikdash, and in the Beit HaMikdash there are various rules to follow, and here are them. If God was totally, totally convinced, so to speak, that we would not listen to his mitzvot and be faithful to him, then why bother giving us any of these mitzvot, which you have in the rest of Parshat Bechukotai. Now, a thought just occurred to me. I don't know exactly how to express it yet. I have to mull it over, but I'll give it a try. There are two topics of mitzvah towards the end of the Parsha, which sort of are a little unique in being part of our everyday world, but removed from our everyday world because of the fact that we don't have a Beit HaMikdash. But not eliminated, or not totally put on hold, because there are plenty of other mitzvot like that. If that's confusing, I hope to dispel the confusion momentarily. Let's review a certain topic, or two topics, in halacha. If a person owns a female cow, goat, or sheep, that would be a cow, a female goat is called a nanny, and a female sheep is called a ewe, E-W-E, in Hebrew, Rachel. And one of them is pregnant for her first time. And at the end of pregnancy, the big moment comes, and it's a boy, a male calf, kid, or lamb. Then that offspring, the first issue of the womb of the mother animal, is sacred. It's called Bechor, specifically Bechor Behema Tohora, the firstborn of a kosher domesticated farm animal, and it has sanctity. The owner of the animal is now duty-bound to take care of it for 30 days in the case of a sheep or a goat, 50 days in the case of a calf, and then give it as a gift to the Kohen of his choice. This is one of the 24 gifts from the people to the Kohanim, and the Kohen must accept this gift and then bring it as a sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash within its first year. He could bring it immediately, or he could wait for the balance of the year and then bring it as a Bechor. He brings then back a lot of the meat that's eaten with his family in a state of ritual purity, and the gift has been given, and the mitzvah has been performed. So the question is, what is the applicability of this mitzvah? You might think that without a Beit HaMikdash for the Kohen to offer this animal as a korban, that this mitzvah doesn't apply temporarily, as we are between Beit HaMikdashes, Bate Mikdash. The fact of the matter is, the mitzvah applies today. Today, the year 2015, a person owns a female sheep who's pregnant for her first time. If the baby is a boy, a male lamb, it is sacred. It has to be taken care of for 30 days and then given to a Kohen as a gift. The Kohen must accept it, and the Kohen must offer it as a sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash within its first year, today. Question? Yes, of course there's a question. We don't have a Beit HaMikdash today, and we don't do sacrifices today. So what's the Kohen supposed to do with this animal? The answer is, the Kohen is stuck with the animal. He's not allowed to sell it. He's not allowed to slaughter it. He must raise it, excuse me, take care of it, feed it, shear it when it needs to be shorn for its own health. The wool has to be buried, cannot be used for any purpose, including the making of tzitzis. And if we don't have a Beit HaMikdash before this sheep has passed on, the carcass is buried and nobody benefits from it. Well, that sounds a little ridiculous. It sounds a little burdensome, or a lot burdensome, to the Kohen. And that's why the Shulchan Aruch teaches us how to avoid this mitzvah. It says, when the mother sheep is pregnant, go to a non-Jew, offer to sell him 0.1% of the sheep for a shekel. I'm just making up those numbers, could be anything, sort of token. And if he gives you the shekel and is now a 0.1% owner of the sheep is now halachically jointly owned by Jew and non-Jew. And when it gives birth, if the offspring is male, it has no sanctity, no status of Bechor, because it has to be a 100% ownership by a Jew. Now, there is no problem. You don't give it to a Kohen. You don't have to worry about when and if he'll be able to bring it to the Beit HaMikdash. And he's not burdened by it, and nothing is lost. So it works. Afterwards, the birth, you go to the non-Jew and say, how'd you like to make a 100% profit? Here's 2 shekel, and I'll buy back the 1,000th portion of the mother sheep that you own, and everybody's happy. That's what Shulchan Aruch says. I have always felt it very sad, maudlin, melancholy, I don't know which is the right word, that the Shulchan Aruch, which is dedicated to teaching us how to observe mitzvot, has to tell us how to avoid doing a mitzvah. But that's what has to be. You cannot let this mitzvah, it's forbidden by rabbinic decree, to allow this mitzvah to continue, which means you have to avoid the birth of a halachic bechor, behemah tahorah, which is Kodesh, because we can't handle the Kedusha today. Okay, next. Ma'aser Behema. The Parsha ends with the topic of tithing, T-I-T-H-E, tithing, tithe, taking tenth of the animals that are born, and there's a procedure there also. Let me describe it briefly. A person owns flocks of sheep. Same goes for goats, same goes for cows, except they're usually called herds. And in any given year, there are a whole bunch of newborns to his herd, flock. And at certain points of the year, he is bound to take all of the newborns during that calendar year. Actually, it goes from Rosh Chodesh Elul to Rosh Chodesh Elul, and gather them together and leave an opening in this pen corral that is enclosing them, and have them be drawn out one by one and count. When you get to nine, the tenth one that passes under the shepherd's crook is Kodesh. You declare it Ma'aser and it becomes holy. This time there's a difference, which we'll talk about when we come back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Bechukotai and for Yom Yerushalayim shortly. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Bechukotai and for Yom Yerushalayim, which we haven't really gotten to yet, but I have a transition between the two, which we'll hear in a moment. We were just talking about Ma'aser Behema. Let me finish the scenario. Let's say you had 78 newborn lambs from your flocks of sheep all over the country. You bring the newborns together and you gather them into an enclosure, 78 newborn lambs. And you have a small opening allowing one to pass at a time, and a mother sheep is outside that opening attracting and bleating to the lambs, and they start following and etc., etc. And you count. The tenth one is Kodesh. You declare it Ma'aser, making it Kodesh, and you dab it with paint on the rump so that you won't get it mixed up. You continue counting, and you get to 20, and you get to 30, and you get to 40, and you get to 50, and you get to 60, and to 70. And even though there are 78, only 7 of the animals will become Ma'aser in this selecting process. Now, you are obligated, they belong to you, but you are obligated to bring them as a korban in the Beit HaMikdash, called Ma'aser, and there are rules about what parts go on the Mizbeach, and how much of the animal you get back to eat with your family and friends, and you could have a whole party as long as everyone is tahor to be able to eat it, etc., etc. This mitzvah applies today. Same problem, easier solution, but same problem as we had with Bechor. Here's an animal that has to be brought as a korban, and we can't bring it as a korban without a Beit HaMikdash and a Mizbeach. What are you supposed to do? So here the Shulchan Aruch tells us how to get out of it, and it's a very simple thing. You just don't do it. In other words, you have 78 newborn calves, or newborn lambs, or kids, whatever, and Mazel Tov, good luck with them. Don't gather them together, and don't count them out, and don't declare the tenth one to be Ma'aser, and it's not done. With Bechor, the animal, when it comes into the light of the world, is Kodesh. And therefore, you have to take that measure of partnership, even token, with a non-Jew in order to avoid the Kedusha at birth. But with these newborn lambs, there is no Kedusha to the tenth until you go through that process of gathering them together and counting them out. So just don't do it. And it works like that. So here's an example. This is why I mention it like this. We just went through the Tochacha. The people are getting close to entry into the land. Actually, not yet, because of the things that happen in the book of Bamidbar. But technically, they're out of Egypt. They have the Torah. they're ready to move, and next step, Eretz Yisrael. A lot of rules to follow. So the Tochacha basically says, if you keep the mitzvot, then everything will be good, and if you don't, things will be bad, including losing the land and going into exile, and then it'll be a process of coming back. So this has been a repeating theme in Jewish history, but let's cut to the chase. Yom Yerushalayim, the reunification of Jerusalem from the time of the third day of the Six-Day War, and in the Jewish calendar, we're talking about this coming Sunday, which means tonight, which is part of Friday Erev Shabbat, would be the first day of the war. And count your own days, 6 days, and that was it. Miraculous war that dropped in our hands not only all of Yerushalayim, but many other holy places and other parts of Eretz Yisrael, which are all holy, and they became part of the Jewish collective of the State of Israel. Not getting into now whether sovereignty was declared over them or annexation was done or not, what I feel should have been done, what wasn't done, or whatever. That will leave for a different time. The fact of the matter is that we have now Yerushalayim, and we celebrate that on Sunday under Jewish, whatever you want to call it. I say it that way because we gave over certain authority to the Muslim Religious Council on Har HaBayit, and personally I believe that was a big mistake, but it was done, and we'll have to figure out how to undo the damage. Anyway, I don't want to get into that. What I want to do is take you a little bit further back to 1962, summer. That was my first time in Israel with my family, my first time altogether with my family. And I remember distinctly from Tisha B'Av that the place to go on Leil Tisha B'Av was Har Zion, Mount Zion, which was in our hands. And I remember somebody pointing out in the distance a building with a roof and an antenna, and he said, "You see that? A little bit further than that, in the same direction, that's where the Kotel is." I remember standing behind the King David Hotel, looking out at a sea of barbed wire leading to no man's land, and being able to see the walls of the old city, but not go there. And if the closest you could get to Har HaBayit was somebody pointing in the direction, and the closest you got to the old city was being able to see part of the walls, and that's all, then the miraculous and wonderful events of June 1967 that put Har HaBayit Biyadenu, again, without getting into the whole business, and put the Kotel back in our control, and all of Jerusalem. This was a wonderful thing. Is it the end of the story? Definitely not. What I've spoken in the past about Yom HaTzma'ut, I feel very strongly about Yom Yerushalayim. It is a step in the right direction with plenty to still go. I always remember with a half smile and a half sadness a comment that I heard from Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld when he was visiting one time, and he was being driven from the airport towards Jerusalem, and he saw this magnificent modern art sort of ironwork sculpture depicting the two luchot, the two tablets, until somebody pointed out that he was looking at a McDonald's M. And even though there is a kosher McDonald's, there are also non-kosher McDonald's, and if Jerusalem and anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, there is still a non-kosher McDonald's and non-kosher pizza shops and non-kosher restaurants and seafood all over Eilat and many other places as well. Then we have something to thank God for, but we are not yet there at Yerushalayim HaBenuya. And that's why we sing, just like anywhere else in the world, we sing Lashana Habab Yerushalayim HaBenuya. Lashana Habab Yerushalayim by itself, well, I've been living here for over 33 years, and I carry a Yerushalmi card, and I consider myself to be a Yerushalmi, and I don't eat Yerushalmi kugel anymore, but not for taste reasons, but just kidding. But this is a wonderful, wonderful halfway gift from God. I also believe that God sort of says, okay, they got it, let's see what they're going to do with it. The, you know, every yeshiva and every shul and every mikveh and every kosher facility is a plus, and those things that detract from it are the minuses. And we still have a long way to go. But Dayenu teaches us that we have to thank God for step by step. And the events of 67 war certainly were a major, major step. And the thing that popped into my head yesterday was the comparison to Hanukkah. I know that officially Yom Yerushalayim and Hanukkah are not the holidays that are linked, but there is definitely a parallelism in the story where we, in the Hanukkah story, regained autonomy over Israel. The establishment of the State of Israel regained autonomy for the Jewish people over the land of Israel. And the events of Milchemet Sheshet Hayamim, the Six-Day War, increased the territory which we had since 1948 by putting more of Eretz Yisrael into our hands. And yet, if you look at what followed the Hanukkah story, you have later generation kings who were corrupt, to say the least, and no one to write home about. And whatever you want to say is lacking in today's Israel or today's Jerusalem pales into insignificance to some of the things that were done by the Hasmonean kings and the generations that led to the destruction of the Second Temple. So we need to pull our act together, and there's a lot to do. But I believe it is extremely important and obligatory to thank God with song and praise for what He has given us. Let's listen to a Shweki song of Yerushalayim, and then we'll talk more. We have program scheduled for Sunday. We have davening at 8 o'clock in the morning, festive davening with Psukei D'Zimra of Yom Tov, with Hallel Shalem with a bracha. We'll also have a Yizkor, an Askara for Chayalim who have lost their lives over the many wars that we've had, and Lahavdil, Mishaberch Lechayalei Tzahal, Tefillah L'Shalom HaMedina. Rabbi Nachman Neil Winkler will not only lead the davening, but he'll speak briefly in words of Chizuk and love of Yerushalayim. And then there are several shiurim about, or specially dedicated to Yerushalayim. And then we're having a luncheon by invitation, by reservations only, in the afternoon. And that's what we're doing here. But a little sad point. A woman called up to possibly reserve a place for herself for Sunday's luncheon. And she wanted to know certain things about the kind of music because, quote, my husband doesn't allow me to observe Yom Yerushalayim. Exactly what that means, I don't know, and I don't want to get into that now because it's, to me, a very sad, hurtful topic. And I don't shy away from saying my piece. I will repeat, I believe with all my heart, and it could be that listenership to Torah Tidbits Audio are all convinced of the same point. And I don't know if anyone who listens needs to hear this, but I'll say it anyway. I believe, let's broaden the picture, take a couple of steps back. Sfirat HaOmer, starting with Pesach, going to Shavuot. That period of time used to be a little bit festive, sort of like Chol HaMoed, between Pesach at the beginning and Shavuot at the end, and the bringing of the barley offering in the Beit HaMikdash, and the bringing of the Shtei HaLechem in the Beit HaMikdash, the Mincha Chadasha LaHashem. It was a happy time. And with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the happinesses was sucked out and it was left a vacuum, and the vacuum was filled by partial commemoration of the tragedies of the Crusades and partially of the Bar Kochva revolt and the deaths of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. And there are certain trappings of mournful behavior during the Omer, like no weddings and like not hair cutting or shaving and not music and different opinions. We're not going to go into that again. But I see, picture a flexible string or a rubber band stretched between Pesach and Shavuot, which has drawn low, stretched low into the depressing, mournful kind of attitude. And there are bright spots. Lag BaOmer is a bright spot in this period. So it sort of pulls the bands in its area up towards the good part, the good side. And I believe Yom HaAtzmaut and Yom Yerushalayim do the same. They are a hint of what's still to come. And I've often said that to me the most important part of Yom HaAtzmaut, and I say it for Yom Yerushalayim as well, is that at the same time that we're saying Mo'adim L'Simcha, Good Yom Tov, Happy Holiday, we are immediately combining that with L'Geula Shlema, to the final redemption. I don't believe that God wants us to say thank you only when everything will be done. I believe we need to be thankful and to express our thanks to God for the little steps on the way. Picture a person, a relative, child, parent, whatever, in the hospital for a long haul, operations needed. Each time the doctors say, we just did some corrective surgery and it went very well, Baruch Hashem. The patient is not out of the woods yet, but this was a very positive thing that we were able to accomplish. Then that is a cause for celebrating. That is a cause to say thank you to God. Is the patient up and around and dancing around? Not yet. But it's something. And if it happens again and again and again, then these are things that we need to show our appreciation and thankfulness to God. Always saying, to the final recovery. And I believe on a nationwide basis, that's the story here. Ligula Shlema, to me, puts the perfect perspective on the joy that we need to express to God for the establishment of the State of Israel, Yom HaTzma'ut, and for the reunification of Yerushalayim, and even more than that, to the amazing success at the Six-Day War. Remember that Nasser of Egypt announced publicly, repeatedly, before the war broke out, his intention to drive Israel into the sea, to destroy the Jewish Israel and the Jewish people in it. He said once, if it costs me 1 million Egyptian lives, that's what we're going to accomplish. And God said, I have a different plan. And when I read and think about the success that Israel had against the Egyptian Air Force, destroyed the entire Egyptian Air Force without one plane leaving the ground. One Egyptian plane leaving the ground. How can you not see that this was the hand of God helping us big way? And then not to say thank you to him? If nothing else, but there's plenty more. And it means reunification of Yerushalayim, it means reacquisition of Hebron, and reacquisition of Beit Lechem, and reacquisition of Shechem, and it's just miracle upon miracle, wonder upon wonder, and you need to ask what's wrong with the people who can't see their way to say thank you to God for the great things that he has done. We should not be saving thank you until the patient is totally recovered. There are too many things along the way that we need to be thankful for. A reminder, this Shabbat is not only Bechukotai, but we bench Rosh Chodesh Sivan, which will be Tuesday, Monday night Tuesday, and subsequently a week after Yom Yerushalayim is Shavuot. And what more can I say but Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, Lehishtameah.